The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 596, recorded on December 9th, 2020.
Welcome to the 596th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and 429th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah. So, as things continue to be a shit show, I'm not going to discuss it now. But, yeah, there are grave things going on right now. But, So, I was going to play Dragon Quest XI. Here's the problem I had. They won't let me live stream it. And from what I understand, it's nothing new. They weren't allowed to live stream on the PlayStation or PC or Switch. And that just pisses me off, and I think, you know, why bother? I'm not even going to bother playing if they don't let me live stream. It's just a waste of time, then. I just can't enjoy it knowing that they're trying to restrict the way I play a game. So instead I played it. Go ahead.
They did that with Persona 5 too.
I think with Persona 5 they didn't allow people to show spoilers.
But also very specifically they like, once you booted up the game, the moment you loaded your game file or started a new game, it would like block recording.
Yeah, and it seems like they don't... See, the problem is that both games are really, really, really popular. So they don't have to worry about not having it show up. I just wonder, if Microsoft really did buy Sega, Microsoft would sell Atlas, yeah, guess what? You're going to let people live stream it.
And, like, it's stupid, too, because, like, capture cards exist. You're not going to stop people from streaming if they want to stream.
Well, that's just it. They allow people to capture it, you know, to record the video. They just don't want you to air parts of it. I don't know. It's just anti-consumerist, and at some point they're... I don't know when, but they're going to beg for people to buy their games. I mean, they only make two games now. I mean, when was the last time you heard they were going to make something like Catherine?
Yeah. I don't know.
So
I don't know. It's a bummer.
So I played...
Dragon Quest XI is a Squeenix game, though.
Yeah.
This is the first I've heard of Squeenix doing a thing like that.
I don't know why they decided to do that, I guess, other than not spoiling a game, but that seems like a...
Yeah, but it's not even spoiling the game if you're just playing the first hour.
Yeah.
What, do they think people watching it are saying, well, I saw it, I don't have to buy it now? It makes no sense.
I have no idea.
I've never seen a stream that would make people say, well, I know what the game is like, I don't have to buy it now. It doesn't look like, so, you know. Usually it makes people say, that's something I'd like to play for myself.
Yeah. I think, were people not able to stream Project Octopath? I know people put up videos of it.
Anyways, I did play Haven instead, and I did stream that. Haven is an indie game in which you play two characters who have the ability to glide over the thing, and they're on the run from something. I don't want to give away that, but yeah, it's one of those rare games in which you're dealing with a couple that's not at the beginning of a relationship and not at the end of a relationship. That's actually during a relationship, and they're actually acting like partners. Because usually either it's you have to win the girl, which is idiotic unto itself, but, you know, or you have to rescue, or you have to, or it's in the middle of a breakup, and, you know. No, this one is just a loving couple, and it's... They banter, and there's not much more to it, you know, but it's refreshing that you actually have a game that focuses on something that's in a relationship. I know Catherine is about being in a relationship, but the lead character of that game made me want to slap him in the face several times. Because he's a complete and utter douchebag. You've played Catherine, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know that, what's his name? I forgot his name.
Vincent.
But Vincent, yeah, Vincent. Vincent is such an unrepentant douchebag. Hey, Vincent, three words. Or four words. I have a girlfriend. But, you know, that game just depicts...
So much as he's a giant pussy that doesn't know how to take control of the situation.
Yeah, but it's such an extreme. And the game depicts all men as helpless sheep who will be devoured by a vagina.
There are other things that will devour them.
Yeah, but basically a giant vagina coming from below. Anyway, that's not the only thing I played. Did I talk about this last week? I wrapped up I did. I like the ending, and I like the epilogue. I also played for the first time Pathfinder Kingmaker.
What did you think of it?
Well, I'm gonna ask: did either of you play it?
Yes.
Okay.
Played. Talked about it.
So here's the thing. I like the RPG aspect, and by the way. Well, as I was playing, I kept on thinking, how did Wizards of the Coast not sue? Because this is Dungeons & Dragons. Exactly Dungeons & Dragons. From the monsters to the effects to the spells to everything. It's Dungeons & Dragons. They just don't say Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, yeah, a lot of stuff is public domain, but... the character descriptions, the die rolls, the hit dice, the effect, everything is taken right out of Dungeons & Dragons player guide and DM guide. Everything.
You would have to look at the... I know that there was a similar suit where a long time ago, TSR tried to copyright the words Ranger and Paladin. So there's a lot of things that, like you said, are... public domain and may seem similar, because like this is when I asked, you know, how can whoever made Pokemon not sue Studio Ghibli for Ni no Kuni 1, which blatantly said they made a Pokemon game out of their first game, and you told me, oh, the mechanics can't be copyright. Well, then there's your answer: the mechanics can't be copyright.
Yeah, but here's the thing: it's not just mechanics; it's actual text. And it's actual, you know, they didn't even change the number of hit dice creatures have. And I think Wizards of the Coast did make up Tiefling. I have not seen that anywhere else. Stuff like that. I'm just saying, this is so Dungeons & Dragons, it's not even funny.
Oh, yeah. It's Pathfinder, and they use their own rules. They have different rules, but it's still that... Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons adventuring game, and I guess there's certain aspects that are either not copyright or they change it enough that it excuses a cut. Because they made these books way before the game came out, so if they were going to sue or stop them, they would have done that sooner. And I thought D20 was supposed to be for everyone, that anyone could use D20, like the rule set, anyone could use it. I remember that being a thing many years ago.
Anyway, so it's obviously based on 4th edition. And the reason why I know that is A, the release date, and B, the fact they still have an alignment system, because the 5th edition tossed that out. And the story is fine. The only problem I have with it is the combat is awful. By the way, the one thing I wish they did retain from D&D is that anybody should be able to drink a healing potion. Not just one specific class. That's idiotic.
They said, only the alchemist can do it?
No, the bard can do it. My bard can drink a healing potion, but my mage cannot.
That's strange.
But I like the way they handle alignment. so my character's neutral good. If he does any other alignment, it'll move the circle a little bit off to one side. And if I do another neutral good thing, it'll push it back towards the neutral good. So there's one point of the game in which it's impossible to defeat this group, so I'm basically forced to do a neutral evil act. But it's like my only neutral evil act that I've played in the game. So it's not, it's sort of like having to go against your morals, but you have no other choice. And there'll be times in which there is no neutral good option. You know, there's either no option whatsoever, but sometimes I'll say chaotic good option, lawful good option, you know, chaotic neutral option, you know, that sort of thing. I notice on Paladin, they are obviously they're expressly forbidden to do any evil action. So you can't do, those options are not there if you're playing a Paladin. But I'm playing a Sorcerer. And there's a lot of mechanics in which I don't like. I do like the way you do rest, in which you assign each person to an aspect of the rest. Like, my Sorcerer is an excellent cook, so there's a strong chance he'll make a highly rated meal that everybody's eating, which will give him buffs. So, but so far I'm liking it. There's a timer in the beginning. You have to do so, but it's a long timer. It's like 90 days. And everything you do takes up time. And I think it's a keeper. I just put the game on ultra easy combat because it just sucks bad. It has the same problem that the original Baldur's Gate does. It relies too much on die rolls. But anybody who ever plays a tabletop game knows that, you know what? The DM really doesn't rely on die rolls that much. You do something smart, the DM will say, good job, and won't even die roll. And say, yeah, what you did was smart, it works. You know?
Yeah, I wonder how you'll like Baldur's Gate 3, because there's die rolls.
I've been playing that. That's been my complaint. It bows down too much to the random number god, and in a stupid way, too. Like I said, when I was trying to sneak was it a kobold? No, it wasn't a kobold. It was a goblin. I had to do a check with each and every guard when it should have been the option I said, well, I'm taking this prisoner someplace, you know. That should have worked with every guard once I succeeded, even if it was a hard roll. I should not have to do it every single time. It makes no sense from a story standpoint. There was a, I don't know if we discussed this last, but there was a patch for Baldur's Gate 3 to make all your companions less of assholes. They're less asshole-ish now. Which is funny.
Yeah, that's funny. You think they could be some assholes and some nicer or whatever. I know this is still a work in progress, so I'm sure there'll be more changes.
And there was another game I played, and I completely forgot it. Oh, I will say, Cave Story popped up on Game Pass, and that's a game that's missing from my oeuvre, so I'm going to try that out at some point.
I played that game. That's a fun game.
Yeah, it's like, what, from 2003, I think? 2004? It's one of the first true retro games, in which I think it helped start the retro craze. I mean, I know that Mega Man was a part of it, but Cave Story originally was a free game, and now it does come with a price, but that's because it's a special edition.
I remember getting it on PlayStation, and I played it together with my wife and daughter, and we would play, and we would voice the characters, just having fun jokes with them, and doing the journey, and you don't realize how dark that game really is. You know, you think it's going to be a little bit light and funny, but it gets dark, I think.
Yeah. And I also got Starbound. The only thing I really know about Starbound, aside from it being a 2D open world retro game, is that it has one of the best soundtracks by Gareth Coker. And Gareth Coker is also working on Halo Infinite. So yeah, there was another game, and it's running my mind. I'm going to have to look at my profile, because it'll show every game that I've been playing. but yeah, I the one game I have not been playing is Dragon Quest XI, because they just pissed me off so much.
I mean, it's a worthwhile game playing. I don't want to stream myself, because I feel like if I'm streaming, I have to be on. I have to be entertaining and interesting and not boring the audience, and that's really hard to do, and I'd really rather just relax and enjoy my RPG game. So I had no idea they did this restriction on streaming.
Yeah, and it's not a new thing either. It's not new. I also tried Don't Starve. I'm not a fan.
Don't Starve?
Very stressful. Yeah. You're like on a knife's edge the entire time, no relaxing.
It isn't that, it's so that...
Guard down, and that's when the dogs come to get you.
No, the problem with me with Don't Starve is that it doesn't have the, what's the word I'm looking for? The engine, in which once done, you don't really need to do it much anymore. Once you figure out something, it's like, okay, that's a part of it. I don't want to have to constantly look for seeds. I don't want to have to constantly look for, you know, it's just like, yeah, I get it. You had to do this to do that. That's fine.
Right, that's what I mean by being totally on a knife's edge the entire time.
It isn't a knife's edge, it's just...
upkeep things and do things.
It's boring, that's the problem. I mean, there's a game called The Long Dark.
I wasn't...
The problem is, The Long Dark is a game in which you have to survive, and that's also on a knife's edge, too. But once you start doing stuff, it's like, yeah, okay, you got that. Yeah. I think Rust is the same way. Once you do something, it's like, yeah, you got it. Okay, you can move on and start worrying about other stuff. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
Well, I finished up my Trials from Zero playthrough. It was very good, very fun. And now I want to play Trials of Yore, but I'm waiting for Geofront to translate that game from China, I guess. It's very weird. They sent it to China first to be, published and made, and because the sales wasn't doing well, they didn't bring it back to Japan. I don't really understand that to me. That doesn't quite make sense. So the only version of it, apparently, is on Chinese storefronts, which is just, again, strange. They've decided to fan translation, and now just waiting for Geofronts to translate, and then I can play the next chapter.
Did you know that China banned about 100 apps, including TripAdvisor?
I guess they have been banned.
No, they just banned 100 plus apps, including TripAdvisor. I don't know why they banned TripAdvisor, except maybe they had an advisory saying, watch out, this place doesn't respect your human rights.
I guess so.
China has absurdly strict rules when it comes to, like, what can fly in that country. Like, they have to, like, I remember it was the thing about Genshin Impact, is that, like, they have, that, like, games that are in China that have chat options have to have chat filters built in, because they don't want anyone ridiculing the power of Glorious Leader.
Yeah, I mean, basically TripAdvisor just is like a tourist app.
Yeah, so that's a weird one to ban, but I guess.
Yeah.
I haven't been playing too much else, but I'm going to get some games this Christmas, and probably try to get Oceanborn or what's the other one I want? damn it. I hate blanking. There's Oceanborn 2 and Hades, and
you haven't played Hades yet? Okay.
No, I haven't played Hades yet. I want to. It looks good. The Phoenix Rising, Immortal Rising, that's the other one I want to play. That just looks like fun.
Actually, there was a VR game that I got for review, and it's the most anime thing ever.
What is it?
It's Alt Deus Beyond Chronos. Here's the problem I have with it. There's a lot of nothing going on in that game in the first few hours, and it makes me nauseous. I want to be doing something. Alt Deus Beyond Chronos.
Oh, okay.
It's a lot of talking and conversation, and it's like, oh my god. This is making me nauseous because I'm not doing anything. If you're doing VR, you want to have some movement or be doing something, or else you just start getting nauseous because you're just sitting there with a thing on your head and just looking at stuff. And it just goes on and on and on and on. It's like, get on with it. Get on to the gameplay.
You probably wouldn't like a VR game that will chill and just kind of exploring a landscape. Sounds like...
I want to do something. It's just dull and nausea-inducing, and it has nothing to do with fast action. It has to do with no action. So, yeah. I actually recorded it on Facebook, since the only way I know how to stream with that with the Oculus is through Facebook, so. TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been working my way through Demon's Souls on PS5.
Okay.
That game is gorgeous. And actually, like, to a point, though, I actually want to bring up one of the most interesting things about it. It has some of the most disgusting water I've ever seen in a video game.
Disgusting how?
There is a part where you are walking, where you have to go through a swamp.
Okay.
And that swamp is basically in a subterranean cave system that's underneath the world, where basically all of the world's waste goes. Mm-hmm. And the water is so chunky and poopy looking. I've never seen anything more disgusting.
I've seen stuff like that in other games.
Oh my! You haven't seen like something this detailed.
I have, I have a PC.
I promise you, this water is like heinous looking. Okay. You look down and it's just like watery, but also chunky, and it's heinous to a degree that's like ugh. And the sound effects when you're going through it are just. That game is pretty dang good as far as, like, graphics and audio design.
Yeah, but you're still salty about the gameplay design.
so-so. It's a
Soul. In comparison with Dark Souls, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't like that, I don't like consumables that you can run out of and have to go back and grind for time, for some, like, that feels like a waste of time to me.
Yeah.
That is some, and like they fixed some. So there's like a thing about Blue Point. They also did the remake of Shadow of the Colossus.
Right.
And the big thing about them is that they stay true mostly to the original game, with just a visual spruce up.
But what we know your complaint is that they changed some stuff but not others.
Yeah. And I kind of just, like, wish, like, they would have changed consumables as well and been like, yeah, this is stupid. Let's go ahead and make a consumable that just stays with you all the time, like every other Soulsborne game.
On a side note, I just noticed that Valhalla is up on Game Pass, and that's a game I've always wanted to try.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla?
No, Valhalla, as in VA-11 Hall-A. That's the cyberpunk bartending game.
Oh.
I played that other game in which you were a barista. But that came after this one. I think the barista game was inspired by this game. You've never heard of Valhalla?
No, I haven't.
It's where you play a bartender. And it's an adventure game, and part of the thing is you have to accurately mix drinks while listening to people talk.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, it has a single story thread, but it has a lot of characters, and you get to learn all these people and stuff like that. All the while, part of it is you having to mix drinks.
Another one I played recently was Fogs. spelled P-H-O-G.
Yeah.
That one is fun and interesting. Have you seen this one, Scott?
Fox, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is the one. When I was watching the Xbox indie game thing, and we were both totally disturbed by this game. Because it's disturbing.
It's ridiculous.
But it's creepy.
And kind of gross, but also extremely cute.
Okay, so, Scott, picture... how should I put this? A worm? Picture a worm. On each end of the worm, there's a dog's head. And it stretches, and it bounds, and it... It's a puzzle game. What was the name of that other puzzle game that came out on Xbox Live Arcade, which I'm trying to remember? That was just you were as a snake, and the entire game is you trying to move around as a snake. That's what this game is. This game is sort of like that, and it's a puzzle game in which you have to figure out how to manipulate these two dog heads and watching their worm body stretch and...
It is very strange and very cute and very weird. I love that, like... So basically,
it'll give you nightmares.
The main buttons in the game, like each joystick controls one dog head. Each of the shoulder buttons.
It's sort of like, in that way, sort of like Brothers: A Tale. What was it?
Oh, hold on.
Yeah, Brothers: A Tale did that too. Yeah. Sorry.
Each of the shoulder buttons makes the dog heads either bark or like latch onto something if there's something nearby they can bite onto. And then, like, the trigger buttons make one of them, like, stretch out. It's a very interesting thing of, like, you might have to, like, latch one dog head onto an object and then stretch the other one over to, like, a post and, like, latch onto the post to, like, yank the object out as they come back together.
Like I said, gameplay-wise, it's sort of like Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. Because you have individual... The thumbsticks control individual heads, and part of the game is figuring out which head you're controlling with each thumbstick.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a puzzle game much like Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons.
It feels like...
But weirder and more disgusting.
I don't know. There is a part where you, like, literally latch onto a water faucet and it pours into one dog's mouth and shoots out the other dog's mouth. I think it's kind of adorable and charming the way that they go about it. It's a cat dog situation, and everybody is like, "Well, what happens when they eat?" This is like that, but an entire game.
By the way, I should give some background to this. It's by Bitloom, which is a development studio in the UK, which is run by three people, and it does feel like a game that was made by three people. It has that polished indie feel, you know?
Mm-hmm. I like that every time you hit the shoulder buttons, you can make each of the dog heads bark. I like to harass the characters in the game with the dogs.
You must really love Untitled Goose Game.
I do!
Just have the...
It's funny. It's like a bubblegum Kirby's Dream World type scenario thing going on where, like, you're just going through these different puzzle worlds, helping different characters out, and then throwing yourself into a giant snake head which eats you and transports you to the next puzzle world.
Like I said, this game is pure candy-coated nightmare fuel.
It definitely does feel like the kind of thing that somebody came up with on a fever dream.
You know what, though? Some of the graphics sort of remind me of... The Prince of the... King of All Cosmos. Katamari Damacy. It has that graphic feel of Katamari Damacy sometimes. It doesn't hurt that some of the characters look like the prince.
Yeah, I can see that. There are characters that eat things, and then they turn into the objects of the eat. So I'm also not ruling out Bugsnax universe.
You know what's amazing? What's really amazing? This game was not published by Devolver Digital. This is totally Devolver Digital shit, and they didn't publish it.
CodeSync is also is the one who published it, and they are also like they have Gang Beasts, Cake Bash,
yeah,
and a whole bunch of other just weird games under their belt.
Oh, Cake Bash is getting. And I'm glad to hear this, by the way. Cake Bash has been getting a lot of attention, and it's always nice to have an alternative to Mario Party that anybody can play.
Sorry, excuse me.
So let's talk about Cake Bash. So in Cake Bash, it's Mario Party, except you get to choose a pastry, and you get to design your own pastry. You can be a donut and put whatever sprinkles and thing that you want. You can be an eclair. You can be a cake, a slice of cake. and the mini games, you know, the gameplay is really cute. So
I'd like to be the tastiest treat.
Yeah. But the other part of it that really works is that the cakes, aside from the fact they have anime eyes and mouths and all that stuff, they look very real. So when you're walking around with your little muffin, it looks like a muffin is walking around just with eyes and feet painted on. And when you're playing the games, you know, it's like realistic cream and realistic strawberries and, you know, so that has that look to it. And it's on everything. It's on Switch, it's on Xbox, it's on PlayStation, it's on PC.
Yeah, so CodeSync, pretty good publisher. I think they're not, like, on the level of Devolver Digital, but they definitely have a growing catalog of games that's, like, hits that same feeling.
I'd say they were Turn 17 wannabes. Because Turn 17 is an indie developer who decided one day, you know what, we're going to publish too.
Yeah. Team 17 is pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I like the Worm series.
So, I did not know this, but they also, Code Scenic has also developed Onward.
Huh.
And Kingdom 2 Crowns. Kingdom 2 Crowns is frustrating, though. It's frustrating. That's why I don't play it as much. If you thought Kingmaker, Pathfinder Kingmaker was frustrating, Kingdom 2 Crowns is really frustrating. Because I never quite know how to advance past a certain point.
I remember this game. I don't remember playing it for long, but I played it back when it was, like, probably in early access.
They also have that, oh, damn it, Oculus game, Augmented Empire. Which I will try at some point. So. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to have, I mean, 505 used to be where CodeSync and Team 17 are right now. It's like they would have the offbeat stuff that are indie game, published indie games, but couldn't quite make it to a large publisher. So. But yeah, Fox is interesting. But definitely, if you get a chance to play Cake Bash, definitely play that. I wouldn't expect it to be as good and as engrossing as it is, but it is. Like I said, you know, there's always room for another Mario Party game.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Anyways, we were going to talk about the news. One late breaking news that popped up was that Twitch reestablished the fact that they're not going to have neo-Nazis on their thing. And a lot of the response has been great, but guess what? You know, you can have all the rules you like, but you got to enforce them too.
Yeah, for sure. Because, like, the big question is, like, who do you, like, are you actually going to come down on anyone who tries to get away with shit, or are you going to favor
Ninja.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not just that. It's that I've done Jackbox parties which have been invaded by neo-Nazis, and it is actually a problem. If you do white supremacy, Twitch, Google those terms, you'll find some very eyebrow-raising stuff. Like, it's very organized. But like I said, you know, you already had those rules. It's not like you said, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, like they've gone to some length to, like, lay out a whole bunch of new rules and, like, put... This isn't the first time they've done this, because they brought up this whole inclusivity. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know. I had trouble with that word. But, like, they brought that up before, the whole, like, when people were coming out with Me Too and like, being like, we're going to take a stance against sexual... We're going to take a stance against sexual predators. And... I noticed that they went ahead and brought that up again today. Like, you already said that before. So, like, what's the difference between this time and last time? That you're not allowing Confederate flags anymore either? Because it's like, whatever. Okay.
Did they before? Really?
Yeah. Like, you actually have to come out and blatantly say that now. It's not, like, implied.
Well, you can't actually say Nazi. You can't. If you infer it, that's just fine. Just call it alt-right. It'll be all fine. Anyways, I just think it's a nothing move, and it's like, Twitch, put your money where your mouth is.
For sure.
Anyways, we're going to move on to actual game news. Mass Effect and Dragon Age leads leave BioWare, and this comes from some Polygon. BioWare General Manager Casey Hudson and Dragon Age Executive Producer Mark Darrah are leaving the studio. Laura Maley, Chief Studios Officer at Electronic Arts, announced the departures on the BioWare blog, along with personal messages from Hudson and Darrah. Hudson said in his note that after 20 years with BioWare, he has, quote-unquote, made the decision to retire from the studio and make way for the next generation of studio leaders. Darrah will be replaced by BioWare Austin Studio Director Christian Daly as Executive Director on Dragon Age, Maley said. Like Hudson, Darrah called his departure from BioWare a retirement from the studio. Hudson's first credit at BioWare came as a designer and an artist on MDK2, released in 2000. Does anybody remember the MDK games? Do you remember those? How much controversy there were around it? And how everybody thought MDK stood for Murder, Death, Kill?
I thought that's what it was.
Sort of, kind of. They never really said it was. Anyway, he left BioWare in 2014 and joined Microsoft the following year. Hudson rejoined BioWare in 2017 after replacing their departing GM, Aaron Flynn. Darrah joined BioWare in 1997, originally worked as a programmer according to his LinkedIn profile. BioWare recently announced Mass Effect The Legendary Edition, a collection of the first three core Mass Effect games, and revealed early artwork for the next Mass Effect title. The developer also showed off early development of the new Dragon Age game this summer, which is tentatively called Rise of the Dread Wolf. If you ever played Dragon Age Inquisition and played... actually, the ending gave it away, too. But the Trespasser DLC really went into it and talked about who the Dread Wolf really is. I mean, you learned about him in the previous games as a trickster god who murdered Mithal, and then you found out, nope, that's not true. And he is the main antagonist of Dragon Age 4. And the reason why I say antagonist is that Fenharel... The Dread Wolf is not exactly a villain. He's just going to destroy the world. But he's not a villain. He's an antagonist.
Hmm.
So.
When I heard this news, like, it comes shortly after Mike Laidlaw just announced he was doing he was putting together Yellow Brick Games with a few other studio veterans.
For those who don't know, Mike Laidlaw is the main writer behind the Half-Life games.
No, that's Mark.
Laidlaw, come on! He's the one who revealed the plot to Half-Life 3, remember?
Mike Laidlaw was the main creative director on Dragon Age.
Oh.
They have the same last name, I know. I've gotten that confused, too. That's why I had to go back and check.
Yeah. Mike Darrah, I believe... which one is the one that I know? Yeah, Mike Laidlaw is also openly gay, and he was the one behind Dorian, who he said was basically him, an idealized version, his own self-idealized version of him, and the entire thing with Dorian's father was basically his relationship with his father.
Yeah, he formed Yellow Brick Games recently with a few other veterans, and I can't help but wonder if Dora finds his way over to Yellow Brick Games soon. Because they worked on a whole bunch of games together, and I don't know. It feels like a lot of I would say veterans have been moving to either form their own studios or just head to greener pastures.
Well, Casey Hudson, he left, he came back.
Yeah, I don't know what Casey Hudson will do. I just wonder about, like, with the history between Mark Dara and Mike Laidlaw, if he finds his way over there somehow. Mike Booth, the guy behind Left 4 Dead, was, like, the head over at Facebook Games, and now he and a couple guys from id Software's, like, original days are over at a VR company called Resolution Games. The guy who helped found Blizzard, one of the older CEOs, just made his own company as well. Dreamhaven.
Mike Morhaime.
So, like, a lot of veterans have been, like, moving out of established studios and, like, forming, like, smaller independent studios.
Yeah, but that's been going on for a long while. It always happens.
It feels like it's happened a lot more in 2020 than I've seen previously.
Well, here's the reason why. Ever heard of something called Valve? Or is the Steam page? Because it's a lot easier to get yourself self-published now.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, it was harder when you had to deal with physical media.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just interesting and of note that it seems like it's happening a lot more in 2020 than I've seen in previous years. See a lot of these guys that were, like, either higher-ups or creative leads or art directors or anything like that, just, like, forming together and forming new studios.
But by the way, Dreamhaven is not a development studio. It's a publisher, and they're owned by Moonwell, and they have two internal studios, Secret Door and Moonshot Games.
Right. But Michael Morhaime is the head of that, and a whole bunch of the dudes that are at Secret Door and Moonshot are also Blizzard alumni.
Mm-hmm. He also, like every other founder of Blizzard, is part of a metal band and plays bass guitar.
But yeah, I'm interested for the future of games to see. Like, I can't imagine that all of these studios find success. But it is going to be interesting to see what kind of projects they come up with all these sort of veteran studios sort of coming together.
Yeah. We shall see. But it isn't, quote-unquote, the end of BioWare, as people seem to think. I mean, if it ends, it's going to end for different reasons.
It's not looking great for BioWare.
No. Well, I mean, they were forced to make Anthem, which is something they totally did not want to do. And the thing about Dragon Age 4 was that, you know how it became to be? It's that a bunch of guys at BioWare decided, we're going to start making Dragon Age 4 with and not tell EA. They said, we're going to start working on it, and at some point, I think we're going to show off what we've done so far. Not give them a chance to say no if we propose it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it doesn't look great for BioWare. Like, it's kind of looking like a ghost ship over there.
I wonder if BioWare wishes they were bought by Microsoft now. I mean, they had that exclusive deal for a long while. That's why Mass Effect was an exclusive, for a long while, it was exclusive with Microsoft and published by Microsoft. Which is why it's how Microsoft had Titanfall 1 be an exclusive game on the Xbox. Because EA said, we want Mass Effect, and we want to publish it on the PlayStation. Microsoft said, you know what? If you want to do that, give us exclusivity for Titanfall.
Yeah.
Titanfall 2 can be multi-platform. We don't care. We just want Titanfall. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Mass Effect and Dragon Age.
No.
BioWare.
No. No.
The one after that. Halo.
Halo Infinite now planned for fall 2021 release, just from PC Gamer. In the intro to the detailed blog post for Halo Infinite post today, 343 Industries wrote that the game is now scheduled to release in fall 2021. The introduction, written by Bungie veteran Joseph Staten, who joined Halo Infinite's production this August as a new lead, project lead, calls Infinite's release just the beginning of the adventure. After Reach shipped, I became a Halo fan, cheering on 343 Infinite from the sidelines, Staten wrote, but I've spent the last 4 months immersing myself back into the Halo universe, and it's an honor as creative director to help our team ship Halo Infinite in fall 2021. Staten goes on to say that based on the feedback from Halo Infinite's July demo, discussion boiled down to one fundamental truth. We needed more time to do things right. That seems to be a growing trend that people want to take their time to do things right, which is a good thing to hear.
We'll get on back to that. Because I have something to say about that.
Okay. Since Infinite's demo, former Infinite Studio head Chris Lee has left the project, Microsoft has confirmed that Infinite Multiplayer will be free to play. It's interesting.
Well, that was not a secret. They're announcing it now because I thought they announced it like a couple of months ago.
I thought Halo was a single player
game. No, there's going to be a single player campaign, but the multiplayer will be free to play.
Okay. Well, that's cool. The blog post about Infinite's development includes discussion of July's demographics, which are criticized as underwhelming on release. 343's director, Bart Management, Neil Harrison, called the reaction humbling and said that the reality is that the art visuals weren't at the bar pulled for Halo, even in a work-in-progress state. Much of the feedback we heard from the community aligned with our own views, and we were already committed to doing around things like indirect lighting, material response, foliage, and tree rendering, clouds, level of detail, transitions, and character fidelity. Harrison added that they were also looking at additional opportunities for improvement.
Yeah, that's just saying. We're going to add some stuff. So it's very easy for them to delay it because of the coronavirus. Because here's the thing. Had this not happened and there had been a normal launch with plenty of consoles, then they would have released Halo, you know? But since they couldn't release many consoles, they said, you know what, we'd rather have this, you know, when everybody gets, when Xbox Series X's are widely available, then we'll release Halo. I mean, it's going to be on PC, and it's going to be on Xbox One. But they wanted as sort of a coming out party for the Xbox Series X, and since there was a very limited launch, they probably thought, you know what, let's just wait until next fall. And the other thing is Joseph Staten. For those who don't know who Joseph Staten is, he is very important to Halo's early years. He was behind Halo Combat Evolved, Halo 2, Halo 3. And with Chris Lee being booted and Joe Staten being brought in, it's sort of like, yeah, we want this under Bungie again. We can't have Bungie, we'll just have the guy who was basically one of the bosses of Bungie. TJ?
Yes. The situation going on with Halo Infinite continues to make me wish that Microsoft would just, like, Say to 343, hey, you did a good job. You gave it your all. Good way to go in there. We're going to call in some other folks to lend a hand.
But that's what they did.
And those other folks should be in id Software, and id Software should make it on id Tech and make a better shooter.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. Joseph Staten is, like I just said, behind Halo 1, 2, and 3. You know, he's one of the old Bungie, and basically they kicked out Chris Lee, put in Joseph Staten, and told Joseph Staten, okay, do this like Bungie does it.
I just don't know if it's enough. Like, have you seen the game?
Here's the thing. They showed off gameplay from an alpha version, and then after they did that, they showed gameplay, you know, from the in-game graphics from, it was obviously later in development. I don't know why they pushed out. You know, they should have really that alpha gameplay. They should have shown off in like March and said, "This is how it is early in progress." You know, I mean, they didn't put their best foot forward. They're just letting it cook now, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. People will be playing. Halo is going to be coming out. I mean, it's free to play. People are going to be playing it.
I stand by what I said. I feel like Microsoft should leverage their resources and let it make a better Halo.
Well, for one thing, they don't own it yet, though.
So many good shooter studios under them now. They have Machine Games. They have id Software.
They don't have id Software yet.
There's another one.
You're thinking of, oh, damn it, the people who did Dishonored. Oh, God, Arcane.
Not Obsidian, oh, my God.
They have Arcane, yes. They have Arcane, yeah.
They have a bunch of good first-person studios under them.
They don't own them yet, though. They don't own them until March.
I know. But dang it. I would love to see, id Tech leveraged to make another Halo game.
What's not in the news, by the way, is that there are buzz about a new offshoot Halo game coming. And a lot of people are assuming, oh, Halo Wars.
Mm.
Well, there's a lot of games that people are thinking that Microsoft is going to be doing now.
Well.
the Halo, the Lost New Vegas 2, just a whole bunch of games people are assuming are going to be being made now.
You know that new space game that Bethesda was making? I was shocked to hear that it's actually coming out next year. Or, I mean, the end of this year. Something like that. Starfield. Yeah.
Yep.
But it's coming out a lot faster than I thought it was going to come out. I thought that thing was going to be like, yeah, it's going to be in 2021. And I thought it was going to be something like, 2022, 2023. You know? Did you know that PlayStation was in moves to have Starfield be an exclusive game to the PlayStation for a year?
Hmm.
And then Microsoft bought ZeniMax, and that was canceled.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for when the sale is actually made and they say, The Elder Scrolls 6, exclusive on PC and Xbox.
I will not like that. But
no, it's a limited, but they would make sure they say, well, it's a limited, you know. The PlayStation version will come out a year later.
I'm just happy that Deathloop got in under the radar before this deal.
Yeah, actually, Sony announced a 2-year exclusivity agreement. I'm trying to remember which game. I think it's for the next Persona.
Hmm.
I'm trying to remember.
That makes sense. Sony's always been really tight with Atlas.
Yeah, something like that. I'm going to have to news. I mean, there was rumors about GTA 6, but that wasn't happening. No way. Oh, yeah, Project Athea with Square Enix.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be exclusive for 2 years. Which it better be, because if Microsoft says, oh, yeah, well, guess what? I hope you enjoy Skyrim.
What hasn't Skyrim been put on?
There's another exclusive that's going to be to PlayStation 5, which Sony fans are a little bit annoyed by. And that is Gran Turismo 7. It'll be a PS5 exclusive, and it's not coming to PS4.
Okay. PS4 can't handle it then, that's what I would assume.
Which is bullshit. It's a racing game. It's a racing game. That's so easy to downscale, it's not even funny. Racing games, by the way, are always used to show off new graphics, because racing games, since they're a linear track for the most part, they're easy to make look gorgeous. Because they're not hardware intensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know. They're always the games that they would show off. Look at Forza. Look at Gran Turismo. Look how gorgeous it looks. Yeah, we know. It's a racing game. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And another thing that's really pissing people off about Dragon Quest XI. Go ahead, TJ.
Square Enix delists original Dragon Quest XI Echoes of an Elusive Age as S version comes out. Square Enix has delisted Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, from various digital storefronts to coincide with the launch of the new S version. I noticed on the Steam page for Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, Digital Edition of Light, reveals the game was unlisted on Valve's platform at the request of the publisher and will not appear in the search. The notice says Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, which came out in September 2018, is no longer available, and points to the new Dragon Quest XI S.
Definitive edition. You don't have to keep on saying Echoes of an Elusive Age. That's just ridiculous.
which came out December 3rd, 2020. A cursory glance at PlayStation Store and the Microsoft Store show Dragon Quest XI has been delisted there, too. Even Humble notes the game is unavailable. Some fans have reacted negatively to the move. The definitive edition of the JRPG launched on Nintendo Switch in September 2019, and S is a port of the Switch version for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. While S does include some improvements over the original and extra content, it has some graphical differences, which are considered a downgrade. No one begrudges the existence of the S version, of course, but existing owners of Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, feel burned that they're having to fork out full price for a new version of the game in order to get access to the new content. Over on Steam, scores of negative reviews have hit the page for the original Dragon Quest XI, most focusing on the lack of an upgrade, the cost of the new S version, and the delisting. Does this stop the copy you have from working?
No. If you already own it, you can download it.
Mine still works, and in fact, mine still works, and I went to the store page for Dragon Quest XI, and I don't see any negative reviews.
Well, which store page are you looking at?
Steam, and...
You better check again. Okay. Here's the thing, you know, Valve is...
Earlier this morning.
Yeah, Valve has been taking down negative reviews, too. But, yeah, it's a dick move. It's a dick move.
Well, I mean, I think like, if they make an updated version and they stop making the original version and now they just have this version and then the others would sell out, I think it was Cyberpunk. And, you know, and they just have the newer version, it's no different than that.
It's not no different, though. It's based on the Switch version, not the PC version.
Oh, yeah. You have to very specifically look for the original version to see the bad reviews. But, I don't know. Like...
For one thing, the original Dragon Quest XI is less expensive.
Yeah, I have Dragon Quest XI here. I was able to search for it.
Well, that's because you own it.
Okay. Well, I do own mine.
Yeah, they can't take... Well, they could take it away from you. That's the fucked up part about the DMCA that you have to sign. Yeah, you're only renting this. You may have thought you bought it, but guess what?
Yeah.
You can still buy the disc, too, for the Switch.
I mean, if you own the original copy... then I don't see...
You can't get the extra content that comes with the S version. They're not releasing it on the original.
You'd have to buy the newer version. And I see...
Sort of reminds me of Dark Athena.
I see positive reviews still. I don't see any negative ones. You might be right, the negative ones might have been taken off. I don't know. But I'm only seeing...
It's on a specific store page, though.
So. Yeah, here. It's, it's under the version that's not the S version. It recent reviews are showing mixed compared to, like, very positive.
Yeah, mixed, quote-unquote mixed. But anyways, I mean, if you own the original Dragon Quest, you not only do you have to buy a new version of it that's inferior just to play the new content, you know?
What is the new content? Is it like a lot of different
stuff? It's just DLC stuff. But
there's some DLC stuff. There's a...
Exclusive stuff?
If you wanted to play the nostalgic kind of classic version of the game, that's in there. There's the... I think there's more draconic challenges that make the game that much harder. there's the option for characters to lie to you.
I think the thing that people are most upset about is they want to play that retro version, which is basically playing Dragon Quest as a top-down 8-bit game, or 16-bit game, really.
16-bit, yeah.
I think the one thing that they've done wrong here is that they really should just make an upgrade, like, for people to just spend a couple bucks and get the, get the definitive version.
Spend $30. What is it? $30-$40 for Dragon Quest XI.
I believe that's what Bethesda did when they did their Ultimate Edition for Skyrim. They gave all the current owners of Skyrim the Ultimate Edition, at least on Steam they did.
You want to talk about No Man's Sky? No Man's Sky said, yeah, all these, if you bought it, it's yours. Enjoy.
And also, they've been going out for free new content for it ever since.
And the other thing is Mark of a Ninja, you know, they had the new definitive HD version. And Team Clay said, yeah, you know what, if you own the original, guess what, you own this version too. Enjoy. And you also own it on all platforms that are part of that thing. So if you owned it on the Xbox 360, guess what? You own it on every single Xbox, the most updated version. Which is, just basically high def, but still.
Yeah, so this is kind of a dumb bummer. The easy fix here is, like, maybe charge $5, maybe charge $10, and just let people...
I think people would pay $20 DLC, just keeping in everything in one place. But to charge the entire game, it's like, what was the name of that Riddick game, The expansion was Dark Athena, and it was basically the same game, except it just had an additional level. Butcher Bay, Dark Athena Edition.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just skeezy to me.
Yeah.
It just kind of doesn't make sense. Like, DLC, figure it out. Come on. It's not that hard.
Should I remind you that you can't stream it either? There's a lot of decisions that Square Enix is making about this game. The problem here is that, I said this before... Dragon Quest is a holiday in Japan. When a new one comes out, everybody closes shop. It is literally a secular holiday in Japan. So they can do this kind of stuff. And what are you going to do, not buy it?
Yeah, not buy it.
Well, what's funny is that they put it on Game Pass, so they say, well, you don't have to buy it. You can just play it.
Yeah.
But still, even though I don't own the original... it sort of annoys me.
Yeah.
I don't really care about the graphic downgrade either.
I didn't see any graphical difference on the 3D. It looked the same to me, but I don't know.
There are people who care about the difference between 60 frames per second and 120 frames per second.
Yeah.
And the only difference with that really isn't the frame rate, but more the responsivity of your controller. That's where the frames per second goes from 60 to 120. That's where you'll feel the difference. Anyways.
Mm. Yeah. Silly marketing decision. They really just, like... And, like, it's 2020. Is it really that hard to figure out just, like, how to make a DLC package in 2020? Apparently.
I'm willing to bet you they're gonna Street Fighter this, and there's going to be Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age... Hyper Turbo Omega S Plus version.
I think if you've seen Japanese animes and whatever, S is usually like the top rank with that. I'm not sure why S is, but that's
special.
What I've seen with animes and various other things. S is like Ultimate Edition.
Yeah, special.
Yeah.
S for special. Yep. You have, Bronze, silver, gold, platinum, special. Or, of course, F, D, C, B, A, and S, depending on if they want to do letter grades. Anyway, I probably will play Dragon Quest XI at some point. Usually when...
Yeah, at least see how you like it.
I already know how it plays. I mean, I played the D3. It's not strange to me. I know how it's going to play. Anyways, if you want to play a better Dragon Quest game, just get Yakuza Like a Dragon. Hey, wait a minute. TJ, have you ever gotten around to playing that?
Nope.
You should. It's a Dragon Quest game. You too, Scott. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us a comment. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chokes.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, though.